Ja, welkom iedereen bij misschien wel de laatste van vandaag. Maar je weet het nooit bij Angry Nerds.
Het is
zomaar kunnen dat we nog even doorgaan. Nou, maar dit is OrangeCon.
De laatst geplande van OrangeCon.
Van OrangeCon, precies. Ja. Nou, Ad zit ook nog steeds tegenover mij. En daarnaast is inmiddels aangeschoven...
Middag, het is Stitch.
En kijk eens. Oh, en er komen nog veel meer mensen aan tafel. Dat is hartstikke leuk. Dus even kijken, wie hebben we nog meer?
We hebben op de hoek iemand zitten. En bij ons in de uitzending is het normaal gesproken de vraag... wie ben jij en wat doe jij in de IT?
Mijn naam is Max Kersten. Ik ga ook al bij de nickname Libra. En ik ben malware-analyst.
Ja, nee,
Mag je mij alweer hebben? Ja. Ah, oké. Ja, ik denk even checken hoor, inderdaad. Barry Verkampen, je mag me ook Fish noemen. En ik doe iets met OrangeCon samen met Sherry, Stef en Lennart, zeg maar. Wij zijn eigenlijk een beetje het basisteam, zeg maar. In het kader van basisbeveiliging ook een soort basisteam.
Lekker basis.
Hè?
Lekker basis, lekker veilig.
Ja. Eindbasis heet dat toch?
Ja, precies. Ja, inderdaad.
Kijk, dat zijn de goede woordstappen.
And then we have to switch to English. At least I heard... Your Dutch wasn't all that good yet.
Yeah. Hey everyone, Ali is here. So yeah, really glad, happy to be here among you guys here. So I'm also a fan of your podcast as well. So sometimes, yeah, if I have time, yeah, definitely listen to this one. So I'm managing application security, offensive security teams. And I was also a speaker at OrangeCon. So really, really nice days. And I found so many cool guys. Yeah, happy to be here.
But you even listen to our episodes in Dutch?
Yeah.
How do you?
That's also good for listening skills as well. So.
Fair.
Why not?
So we're educational.
Yeah, of course.
That's a first.
That's it.
Okay.
Well, thank you. Bij je vrienden moet je het maar hebben.
Goed.
What are we going to talk about? Because
There's so many choices here.
Yeah. Maybe they give you a short update about the conference at the moment, how it's running, etc. I can't stick to the table for the full podcast over there.
Okay.
But it may be nice to give you guys a little bit of feeling what's happening around over here. Funny thing to know is that we always have a calculation of how many people go and how many people show up. We had a hit rate of 90%, yep. So which is... quite okay, we like that. Regular conferences usually do something about 75%, so we have people who like to come, and feels also like that everybody has having quite a lot of fun, I think. So that's
yeah,
good.
The atmosphere is absolutely great.
Yeah. So next to that, last year we had about 400 people. This time we have 450 people, so we grew a little bit. Not too fast, and that's also one of the philosophy of OrangeCon. We don't want to grow too fast. We also don't want to become too fast, because in the past, what we, for example, saw on a CCC, which is an awesome conference, we want to have people to know each other and talk to each other, and it's about people. And if it's getting too big, especially when you grow too fast, yeah, you miss the basics of the conference. But do you guys also feel like that? That the conference is very, people know each other and we do it together?
Yep, it is many, many familiar faces, but at least I think about half are new to me or I'm very forgetful. So that could be either case. I think if you grow too fast, you get really challenging how you keep your culture. If you grow slowly, everybody can adapt to the culture. Yeah. Adapt, and that's a better way to sustain over the long term.
This is exactly what we like it to be in that way. It's the same way also for the crew. You can't grow a crew, you can double it in a way, because the crew is breathing the culture in that way, and we couldn't make it possible without the crew in that way, we're very proud on who's helping everybody, 33 of them, they're spending multiple days, multiple nights on building a badge and whatever, and we're very grateful for that, so, yeah.
I feel like the venue is both large and small at the same time, which I feel is great.
Right.
I mean, 450 people-ish is still it's a decent amount of people to gather somewhere. But you have room for the villages, but it doesn't feel like they're put away in like an off corner somewhere. But it doesn't feel like it's too large either when you walk somewhere. Like if you go downstairs for like the main entrance area, there's still plenty of space to sit, talk with people, sit down. So yeah.
Do you also experience it in a way that if you want to search for somebody because you would like to talk to them, it's easy, you can find your people? It's nice feedback round, by the way. I like that.
I haven't really looked for too many people, but the few I did look for, I could find. So okay, I'm going to say a hesitant yes.
Yeah, it's a yes and no, I think. So sometimes I was looking for some of the friends and I was like chasing them. Hey guys, so I'm just going to have a word with you, you know, and because there was like workshops at the same time and two main tracks as well as some cool booth with the hardware hacking stuff. And that's really great. But also I think the location is really great. So it's accessible to everyone, I believe. And I think that I've saw some familiar faces as well, like ex-colleagues, friends, and the good thing is that the building community is too important for us right at this moment of time. And I saw that people that said that last time we were looking for a job, and now because of these kind of events, so we found new jobs and they landed a new job, and that's really great. So because one of the main objective of this kind of event, specifically OrangeCon, is like having more networking opportunities, and that's really cool.
Hey, maybe one of the things also to give you a little bit insights about how we organize OrangeCon, it might be nice to have some insights. This year was particularly quite a tough one for us. First of all, we moved the conference to earlier the year. Usually we organize in September, now it was June. So we were quite busy on organizing in that way. But the second problem we were bumping into is that OrangeCon is organized in a way that we do trainings, and we make a little bit profit on the training, so we can pay the venue and for the conference day in that way. And this year, trainings were very slow in the beginning. And we need to invest a lot. For example, the badge we have, we should have ordered 500, but because of cash flow issues, yeah, we were not able to do it in that way, and also take a risk. You know, you have to think about Sherry, Leonard, I, and Steph, that we are personally taking the risk in that way. Do you guys have any idea if the market on training is changing on there, or the same on registering for tickets?
I'm out of the game for a while now, so I don't know for sure. I do hear a lot of positive things about the trainings that have happened here. So that's a consistent thing that I've just walked around and said, oh, it's training, and it was so much, and it's really high value for money. So that respect, yeah, the level is really high, but I have no clue if the market has changed or, and I wouldn't expect that the market would change if the quality is so high.
Yeah, true.
Maybe the market hasn't changed. I mean, it might have changed. I don't know. No expert there. But if you did the last edition in September and you're doing it now in June, it might be that by the time you announce the trainings, there's less time for people to book. And especially in certain more bureaucratic corporate environments, you would need to state your wanted trainings further ahead than might have been possible. I.e. they went somewhere else because you weren't there, or you were too early and therefore they couldn't. That could be timing-wise an issue.
You're pointing an interesting other problem, actually. We have a lot of large organizations like banks or insurance companies, and they have these intermediate training organizations. So their HR department, they are having a contract, a large contract with one of these companies, and they're supplying about 20,000 trainings or something like that. And then when the cybersecurity people want to have a training at us, then this company is coming to us, and they want to book at our organization, and they only do post-paid, so only post-paid after the conference, but we need to pay our trainers in that way. So lots of corporates are not making it that easy for us in that way. And I'm not talking about the onboarding to be a supplier, by the way. That's even more horrible.
Yeah. But you already are doing that, and they knew in far in advance that the date would be different this year.
Yeah. But I agree with you in the fact, of course, we had 9 months. That's one of the changes. We moved to a different month. And also, I see that we didn't have enough time to recover from the last conference in a way. The good news is that the new conference is going to be in the direction of the same week in that way. Is this a live podcast, by the way, or recorded?
Yep. Yeah. This is live.
In that way, I can't announce the date yet, but at the closing keynote, which is on the live stream, you probably can see what the new date is going to be. So, yeah. So no spoilers, sorry.
Yeah. We should have said we're not live.
No, exactly. Yeah. It's a nice hack.
Yeah. Book your hotel for 2 weeks around this period next year.
No. The next conference is going to be a whole month. No.
We'll talk after we're off the air.
Yeah. So, I need to jump back to the crew, but everybody who's watching, come to the next OrangeCon around the same month next year over there. And I also want to thank you guys for coming over here and doing this live podcast, because it also gives a new feeling about the whole conference. And I heard some very nice feedback also to you guys. So thank you for joining and making also OrangeCon possible. Same for our speakers and more speakers and attendees, or actually villages.
Exactly.
But talking about it, grab your cyber badge, of course.
Exactly. Yeah.
I have a lot of them.
Explain in a moment what you can do with it.
Hey, thanks, guys. And thanks, see you soon.
Bye. Thank you. Bye. Bye.
So you mentioned Elger, what you can do with it. So.
Yeah. Yes. Exactly. Yeah. You can do a lot, but it has a game on it. I'll put it in front of the camera. Everybody, is it in focus?
Yeah.
I hope so. Everybody got one of these cyber tokens. We made these cyber tokens for a lot of conferences, for Wicon, for Tweakers.net, for a bunch of and more. And this time we added a small, simple CTF puzzle on it. And we, as a byproduct, we already have spent several dozens of hours of Codex tokens by people attempting to solve it by sending a photograph and, hey, you can solve it for me. And it actually works in two prompts. It doesn't work in a single prompt. So if you just let it rip, it can rip for an hour. So
is that by design or is that a lucky accident?
It's a lucky accident, okay. Because most of these CTF thingies can be solved pretty quickly, but there's so much misdirection going on this one that the most obvious solutions will cost you CPU but will not yield a result. So
nice.
In how many ways we can solve this, by the way?
Infinitely, of course.
All right.
Yeah, it's data something. So, but it is not too hard. It is like the entry level.
With or without
you
AI?
You can solve it completely without AI.
Without AI.
I think it's even simpler. It's a normal thing you come across, and that's what I'm gonna. You come across this thing basically daily. You will know what it is, but yeah, you have to think a little bit. So, yeah. So we made 1,000 of these, and everybody has one, and
Well, we don't yet, but we'll fix that in a bit.
We are downstairs, the basisbeveiliging village. We brought everything, so certificates, tokens, candy,
UV lights.
Yeah, UV lights. Exactly. Yeah. So it's a lot of fun being here. Be part of the atmosphere. So really grateful for the OrangeCon Orga to have us. So yeah.
Yeah. Max. Mr. Libra.
Yeah.
What have you been doing today?
I gave my talk earlier today at 1:40, successfully failing as a reverse engineer. I think it was somewhat of a first for me as well, to a certain degree. As in, all of the talks I've previously given have been technical ones. This one wasn't. So it was kind of a new venture for me as well. I felt OrangeCon was... it felt like I've never been before. I felt like the atmosphere would match the story that I wanted to tell. And so far, I think it did. I had some good feedback. The talk itself is mainly about what I learned by doing things incorrectly. Not necessarily in the hacker way, doing things incorrectly, breaking them, but more so you want to learn something. How do you approach that? How did I not do that correctly in some cases? And I'm more so trying to pass that message on to others, as I feel the questions I've gotten over time were recurring in certain themes. To give a clear example, I spent quite some time on a blog for one of my previous employers, and I had people, when the blog went live, they would come to me and ask me like, oh yeah, so I spent an afternoon or a weekend digging into it, yet your screenshots of the decompiled code looks a lot different, and I cannot get through all of it. I was like, well, first of all, where are you stuck? But also, how long did you try? Not to say that people should try longer before giving them help, but more so, you cannot expect to look at the binary for 2 minutes and then have the complete analysis done, right? And they're like, yeah, but I spent the entire weekend on it, and I only got 10% in. I was like, okay, that's good, I would say. But they wouldn't seem to see eye to eye to that, right? They were like, no, but you got much farther. It's like, yeah, but I spent 3.5 months full time on these binaries and writing the blog. And the blog writing cost me only about 2 weeks. So about 3 months full time work went into the analysis. And you spent 2 days, which is not to say that you should also take 3 months, but more so that there's your time investment is probably already better than mine. If you got to about 10% in 2 days. So that was one of the things that went recurring, and then some people would seem to beat themselves up so over the fact that, oh yeah, but I cannot get it done. So you cannot get it done yet, right? And then that's kind of the premise of the talk, where don't be too hard on yourself, and sometimes you make choices that have unintended yet positive effects. It might not seem that way in the beginning. Kind of cryptic, but... That's kind of the premise.
So people read the blog and they thought, yeah, you're this amazing god that decompiles that in like over a weekend and knows everything that's going on.
Yeah, I was surprised about that myself as well. Yeah. I didn't have that impression.
Yeah, but you didn't mention that what time it took in the blog? Or?
No, but I figured, I mean, it's like a web page, so you cannot count pages, but I submitted it to the web team at the time as a Word document, mm-hmm. Which was about 40 to 50 pages. I reckon that people wouldn't read that and be like, oh, dude made it in an afternoon.
Yeah.
No. Especially pre-LLM. Right? It was like, even if I did not write a single sentence myself and only had bullet points that I had given to a writer, I mean, I didn't, but let's assume I did, then still the analysis has to come from somewhere.
So yeah, that's true. Yeah. So nothing. It is a bit implied that...
Yeah, I didn't include like, oh, I spent X amount of time on it.
No.
But more so was like, I don't think people assume you can do this in an afternoon, and if you do, then we should probably hire you.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And is it also about if people say, okay, I've wasted a weekend on this, is it wasted?
Well,
or have you just learned things and a couple of ways to not do it?
Yeah, interesting you mentioned that, because it was one of the points as well where for more times than even in a talk I was willing to admit, I've spent looking into code and was like, oh man, this is such obfuscated code, and like this is like proper work, only to find out it was compiler optimized libc code, which at the time was like, damn, I wasted a day, in an evening, a weekend, you name it, right? But I did learn a lot about it, and also learned to see the difference between compile-optimized code and actual obfuscation, even if sometimes they tend to look alike. So there's more learning, but you generally only see that after a while. It's not like you spend that time, you're like, oh yeah, I learned this, but more so that 6 months down the road, you look at some code and you're like, oh, I'm not falling in that trap again.
Yeah.
This is not optimized, like this is optimized code, not obfuscated. I'm skipping this and taking the gamble here. And sometimes your gamble pays off. Sometimes it turns out it was obfuscated code and you still have to go back. I mean, we all make mistakes.
And embrace them.
Yeah.
Embrace them.
Yeah, I would say so.
But failing is learning.
So. Yeah, and I feel like there's bit of a split between the fact that you have either a binary which is too easy or too difficult. There's rarely one where you open it and you're like, oh, this is exactly where I want to spend my time on the difficulty that I have, because you don't have... It's not like you pick a binary which is, like, from a malware analysis point of view, you get a sample and it's like, oh, seems like this is causing issues for customers at the time now. Sometimes you open it and then the binary contains symbols and you click through it and you're like, okay, well, it seems to be done in 5 minutes with this binary, but then you're not really fulfilled either. You're kind of like, okay, that was too easy, right? If I give you a puzzle of four pieces, then it's easy, right? But if I give you a puzzle of like 10K pieces and you want to solve it in an afternoon, and you're like, oh,
nah,
probably at least not alone, right?
No.
But to find the amount of pieces that you want to solve in one afternoon, you sometimes see it, but sometimes you get a binary, 20K functions, all of them unnamed. You look at them, none of them make sense. You're like, seems I'm bailing on this one. At least that's the initial feeling you get. So there's somewhere in between where you learn the most, but even in the cases where you want to bail, you still can learn a lot, as long as what you want to do and sometimes learn is clear for you. If you know, like, oh well, I need to know how it makes connection with the C2, what kind of data does it steal from the machine, then it makes a lot of sense to look into it, into a specific part. Whereas if you just give somebody a binary, like, yeah, what does it do? Do you want to know, is it malware or not? That's kind of a binary answer, yes or no. Mm-hmm. Do you want to know how exactly it functions? Is a complete rundown of every line of code. Yeah, or anything in between. Like, it's a
how
pretty
much damage
variety.
Does it do, or when yeah. does it do damage, or what conditions?
Yeah, exactly.
Is there a kill URL like we've seen before?
Mm, yeah.
Yeah.
The famous WannaCry. Yeah.
I only know obfuscation or deobfuscation, and I only saw the move instruction, so I just quit. Mm. It was a special compilation step that compiled everything into move instructions.
Oh, the mobfuscator?
Yeah, it's beautiful.
I disagree from the analysis point of view. From a technical point of view, it's
absolutely
stunning. It's fun.
Yeah,
it's brilliant.
Do they do that already? Like, obfuscate their entire malware, or is that too much to ask? Or doesn't that work at all?
I haven't seen it, which is not to say it's not there.
Right.
But you also need to decide from an attacking point of view. Some things stick out like a sore thumb, and if you were to do that to your binary, you are an anomaly. By default already.
Infinite red flags.
Yeah, so that raises a lot of suspicion already in a lot of cases. I mean, essentially, if you blend in with the crowd, it gets the hardest to identify.
Yeah.
If you stick out way too much, then it might work for as long as you're undetected. But once you are detected, it's really easy to write some rules and automatically flag it and prevent it.
Better to piggyback on something well-known and used. Or something that looks like a decent application or something.
Yeah, I would say otherwise it's like high risk, high reward.
Yeah.
If you fly under the radar, then sure, but
yeah.
But the moment you have that radar signature, it becomes fairly easy to then detect it. But again, it's a cat and mouse game, because then the attacker knows they've been caught and they'll probably move on to something else. And
Yeah.
Kind of depends on what you want to do and how. What is your risk appetite? Like, do you care? If you're a red team and you just want to see, like, is the SOC paying attention at all, you might go in like a Christmas tree.
Exactly.
If you try to do something very stealthy, then you probably don't want to go in with the same Christmas tree.
No, you do, but you do something else in between.
Yeah.
So, yes.
So back to your talk. So have you received any funny or weird feedback from the audience?
One interesting one was I referenced when Ghidra, I'm a Ghidra user, so that's why it came to pass in the talk. The NSA open source Ghidra in 2019, Obviously with the intent that this, the community itself adds value to the framework itself, which they benefit from in a variety of ways. And then somebody made a tweet, and I think it was for like a PlayStation 2 or Wii or GameCube, something along those lines, architecture that they added as support within Ghidra. And then somebody tweeted like, this is the return on investment the NSA was waiting for.
That's why they open source.
which was a great tweet and a good joke as well. Partially actually true as well, because they are hoping for the community to contribute. But then somebody came to me after the talk and he was like, well, recording to the... I was one of the Nintendo architectures. And then he said like, well, we are actually using it because we're working on like a one-on-one decompilation of, I don't know, I forgot the game, but so we are using this. I was like, oh, well, one of the jokes I referenced in the presentation, actually somebody in the audience is working directly with this, is kind of coincidence. So I thought it was quite funny.
And you also had a talk today, right?
Yeah. Yeah, so my talk was actually about the, was related to the incidents happened 2026 so far. So one of them was like against one of the telecom providers here. So everyone knows about it. So and I think 2026 is a nightmare so far. So every day we're waking up and then we hear that, okay, then a new thing happened, a new breach, a new incident, and the victims are just the customers, you know. And the amount of data and the type of data sets out there is really, really massive, and including all the PII and all the sensitive information. So so I try to actually not specifically talk about the incidents itself, so just generally speaking about these kind of incidents, specifically on the service providers, you know, as they have like their our date of birth, first last name, IBAN, identity, a card, the expiry date as well, any comments, and what kind of services we are using, what kind of SIM cards we're using, and how like bad guys, threat actors can take advantage of these amount of data sets out there, so, and how they can not only using those data sets to establish, set up like S-mishing or vishing or phishing kind of attacks, but also they can use it for like more sophisticated kind of attacks, like from the network side. So so I just tried to say that, hey guys, if you have the bad guys have the data set of the CRM, the Salesforce stuff, or even some other kind of data, or they can even combine it from the other data set from the other incidents and data breaches, so they can put all together and try to targeting you to perform like serious cyber attacks with coming from the infrastructure side, the telco infrastructure side. Like having your MSISDN, your phone number is not a big deal. So maybe, okay, so many people have my phone number, so it's a public thing. So, but in fact, if they have my phone number plus my name and the location and whatever, blah, 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 and then they can easily, you know, perform like location tracking kind of attacks. So, and then they can easily change my subscription type. They can like hijacking my network traffic, the data plane actually. So, and then they can also hijack the SMS coming toward my phone, you know, and even they can find more sensitive information like IMSI numbers as well, and they can perform more sophisticated attack. They can perform like denial of service kind of attacks as well, and this is getting more and more sophisticated kind of attacks. And even I've tried to cover the more like telco fidelity kind of or telco grade social engineering, that someone's calling me and say that, hey, I'm calling from this your network operator, and I have this one, I have the four digits, is that you? Yeah, they can completely verify me, or even the bad guys, they can even verify on behalf of us, you know, because they have whatever they need when you're calling your bank and you need this to do some changes, or you have a question, whatever they ask is just about your identity. Your identity is just date of birth, your first last name, or four digits of your bank account.
Yeah, your address.
So, yeah, they and the address. So all of these, they're currently open sourced.
Yeah, but is it more that the bad actors individually collect more, or is it that there are more public data sources and you and I and everybody at this conference can easily collect them and set up this profile, or is there a level of sophistication to it by these bad actors?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's it. So previously, like, if you exclude these kind of data breaches in the cyber incidents, so they try to always to find the information about the targets or about the victims, about the customers. But nowadays, so they have everything. So those guys, Shiny Hunters, already upload all the information, millions of data sets and millions of information on the internet, and it's accessible to other advanced persistent threats and other bad actors as well out there. So it's not about the a simple data breach, it's about the identity breach, you know. It's actually, they're always trying to complete their data set to have the better profile of their victims, and nowadays they have the, even every week they're completing their data. Is now we got like this, and now other industry, you know, like
it used to be only Facebook who had all the data combined.
Exactly, yeah.
And now the threat actors are combining breach on breach.
Even nowadays, OSINT, yeah, they can easily skip OSINT to perform a profiling someone, you know. It's already there, so they can just grab those stuff and easily targeting any individuals and phishing and vishing and these kind of things is, I think, very low-level kind of things. So they can easily start set up some more sophisticated kind of attacks, you know, by targeting some individuals. And this is really dangerous, you know, because you can't do that much. So operators all around the world, they say that after a breach, so they will put additional mechanisms like to prevent SIM swap kind of fraud. So, and it's already there. So they're trying their best, but it is what it is. It's already there. It's already out there on the internet. So what we can do is just, first of all, I think, is security awareness, mainly for elderly, for students, for kids, you know. We have to deal with that one, because the breach has already happened. The data is already there. So you can't change your date of birth. So you can't change your, so even your phone number is easily to change. But for many businesses, it's their identity, you know. They need that phone number.
It's a problem we can't just solve with only technical solutions.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly,
like the bank will not call you, for example. That's a thing that you see in the app. Every time you open the app, the bank will not call you. And you can check if they not call you, because they will never call you.
Exactly.
That's so really... Yeah.
Well, mine actually did.
Really?
Yeah.
They are still doing that,
credit card payments or...
No, and I was a bit apprehensive. I was in the car, so it was like, okay, well, what do you want? Can you call me back in an hour? Yeah, sure, no problem. Okay.
That's nice.
Okay, that's effort. organize a meeting and let it show up in my banking app. Oh, no problem. Look, there it is. Okay, that is probably real.
So at that point, you either assumed you were fully owned or that it was legit.
Yeah. Well, I had some doubt, but in the end, it was legit, by the way.
Okay, that's good. I thought of... In the Netherlands, we have the Central Bureau of Statistics, and they do statistics on population, so how many people live where. Can we... Is this now something we can do by using open data that has been leaked exclusively and see how many people move from regions and such? Or is that more like we can use it to see how far we have come? We can just mirror it to the official data sources and then we can see how big the gap is and so how many more breaches we need.
Yeah. That's a good topic. Yeah, it's always open source.
For some reason, you sound way too hopeful about that.
I just started laughing because I'm just thinking. Next thing is they say that the Statistics Bureau is cancelled because we
don't need open source.
Well, they open source data.
Yeah.
So that's already open source.
Yeah.
But that's only the results.
I couldn't make it to your talk, but the at least in a personal sphere, so non-IT people around me sometimes are like, yeah, well, what does it matter that it's leaked? And I think your talk gives a very good answer to that question, as in, like, why should you worry? Kind of the old saying for privacy, like, I have nothing to hide, so why does it matter? It still matters for a lot of reasons, but
the blast radius is, you know, is the blast radius matters. So it impacting so many things. So our day to days, you know, so you want to buy something or you want to register somewhere. And also the other problem is that how we can trust the other organization, the other companies anymore. So it's already there. So ID is already open source, actually, kind of, you know. And then and also it rings a bell for the other people with which they are like privacy is more important for them, and they can be targeted. So location tracking and denial of service on a bunch of, or just imagine on millions of subscribers, and it's possible, you know. Just it's gonna be a really nightmare for a telecom operator. So it's gonna be really chaotic.
And subscribe everybody from the newspaper randomly, yeah, in a slow period of time.
Yeah, yeah.
That's scary for some businesses.
More use cases coming.
And do you feel like the increase in breaches is somewhat tied to the fact that you need an account for everything? I kind of feel like an old man for saying this, but like I
went to the youngest at the table.
So I mean, I went to a friend of mine. And I had to park my car somewhere, and then like in the good old days, you could just like put euros in the meter, right? Showing my age, defaulting to euros instead of guldens. Right? So you could just put money in the meter and then you shouldn't run out or you get a fine, right? But nowadays you need to pay online. Fine, right? Just give me a code, I'll pay. But it's like, oh no, you need to have an app installed. Okay, I'll install the app, fine, whatever. You need to also have an account on this app, right? And then I visit another friend in another city. I need another app. I need another account on said app. I order, I don't know, some small items online that I was missing in my household. You need to register for each and every purchase. But for each and every purchase, you need to leave so many details that now instead of my order and my name and my address, right, to get it sent to my home, they also have my email address. They might have my password, depending on how they handle it, right? And sure, you can have a unique password for each edition, but you need to share more information to get through life, it feels. And do you think that ties into a bigger number of breaches?
Yeah, of course. So, you know, you just want to use a free Wi-Fi somewhere and you need to pass over all your ID, your email address, your name, and then your date of birth as well, just
blood
to get
type.
Blood type even, maybe. So just to get a free
so
Wi-Fi, which you already paid for that. Yeah. And then the main problem is that who has, how they're actually storing our information, our critical data, and what kind of encryption, data anonymization is there or not, and what kind of technologies they're using, what kind of protocols is there. And the other topic is that who has access to those information? Is this
everyone
accessible to everyone? Yeah.
Well, and I also had a one. I was looking at password length and password complexity and time it took to brute force that. And one of the things I noticed was that from one year to another, it took longer. Like, okay, we have newer cards and faster computers, and it took longer. Yeah, because in the documents they publish every couple of years, they take the current normal way of storing passwords. So the couple of years before, they used MD5, then they switched to bcrypt, and then they switched to bcrypt with more iterations.
Mm.
Yeah, but the breach where my password got leaked probably didn't, because that's a 12-year-old little web shop somewhere where I once used the password.
Mm.
They don't update. So then you look at the graphs and you say, okay, this is perfectly fine, yeah, today, but not tomorrow, not next year, not in 3 years, and I'm not even talking post quantum crypto, but
so you shouldn't develop for the next 4 years or for like 10 years ahead, if that's even possible.
Yeah, but while I assume that is always,
that can only go right.
Yeah, can as you, me, yeah, to assume that the large companies, the Facebooks and the Googles, will update the way they store passwords, that old little forum somewhere on the internet where you need an account to post a message doesn't.
Yeah, if they can upgrade your password, because you need to do something to upgrade it. You need to know what it is in order to upgrade it, and that's not possible. That's not going to happen in a normal scenario.
Unless
they
you have
ask a, you for a new one, maybe.
Maybe, or they have a list of the unencrypted passwords as well.
Yeah, yeah, that might.
To update to the new algorithm, right?
Yeah. In a safe somewhere.
Yeah. No, so that's also I think a problem. It seems like it's easier to breach because there's a lot of breaches going on, but there's also just a whole lot of old stuff. And normally I was the one saying this from the OT side of the world, like we have legacy stuff that will run for 25 years. The internet is 25 years, well, slightly more, but the main use of the internet is now 25 years.
Yeah, and this is exactly why you also delete users' data after a certain time.
And then, we saw how Odido handled that.
Exactly. So it's just staggering how bad that can be. Like, why are you keeping that stuff? Update your shit.
Yep.
And the clue is that you just throw that in the knowledge graph, the old data together with all the new stuff, and see whatever emerges from there, and there you go. You've got a full perspective on somebody's online life, and what it's up to your imagination what you can do with it, basically.
Yeah. The problem is there that if I do my best in terms of cyber hygiene, I have everything. I'm keeping my passport somewhere safe and secure, and I'm not clicking on anything. But where the other companies that I'm getting services from them, so also they are doing their best to keep everything safe and secure there. They have proper encryption. They have data retention as well. I'm not sure if it's like fair enough or not, but they're doing their best. Their cyber budget is million of euros per year. And then they have another third party that they have complete access to their database or to the aftercare portal. And why a person in another country, as they're one of their engineers or one of the agents, they have access directly to that, and they are the target for the APTs nowadays. Okay. So they're not gonna targeting web application anymore, because they know that we have like different bunch of security mechanisms everywhere. So we are doing like companies doing pen tests, red teaming, they have SOC everywhere monitoring. So they're gonna actually targeting those third party agents there, because they know that they got a access or API kind of access or VPN kind of access, whatever is there, and they can easily query millions of data within the database, and boom, that's
it. Or at least they have a lot of interesting data, like for example the support, the company that did support work for Discord. They also did some account verifications using official government IDs, and they were stored at the third party, and those got breached.
So basically, you can say we have a very, very secure platform. Give us all your data, and then oopsie daisy.
Yeah,
because then you will be compliant with the rest.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh yeah, this is the Odido standard.
Yeah. ISO 9001.
I feel like one of the things that for a bit worries me, but also frustrates me, is you can do from a consumer perspective, you can do everything right, but you have your password safe, a unique, long, strong password for any account you make, no matter how many parking garages I enter, right? But some of the details you cannot change, right? I mean, I'm not the one who should complain about my name, as my domain name is my actual name, right? Including surname. So that's not the best example in my case, but where I live is not public information, right? But it's not. I don't want it to be public information. Oh. Let's phrase it that way. But the point is that I can make a new password for everything. I can delete my accounts. I can be like, oh, well, whatever. You now have my parking garage for parking garage X account, just deactivated or whatever, right? But I cannot suddenly move every time a data leak happens because I'm building my life somewhere. I live somewhere. I have a location that I would like to...
I'm looking for your name badge.
Boo. But so the part that frustrates me is like you cannot change your address as easily. It's not like you can use throwaway addresses for everything. And then they handle them with less care than your password, which, yeah, I mean, there's not much you can do about it, but not give it somewhere if you don't need it. Kind of.
Yeah, and that's even when you take care.
Yeah.
If you don't even split accounts into different email addresses or different locations or whatever, a lot of people will just reuse the same password. We all know that that's a bad idea, but it still happens. And then it's everything
In
at once. Which, yeah, data minimalization, great. And then also don't change it. I mean, you've memorized it, so don't.
I haven't found your place of residence yet.
Yeah, me neither. I was just checking up. So no.
Well, I was lucky with the Odido breach. Yeah.
I'm just looking at the camera in the meantime, and it seems I'm in focus again because I was really out of focus. So
you're always a bit fuzzy.
Exactly. So that's like my location was hidden by camera phone, but it's fine.
All right.
Right.
It's now 4:30, so the day has been going by really, really quickly. I think we have one keynote left, and then the closing already. And we still need to pack up an entire studio.
Yeah, I do still want to ask Elger some questions.
Oh, okay.
Obviously, because this morning I dropped by. Asking you about this whole EU extension.
That's true.
Basisbeveiliging.
Yeah, lekker basis, lekker veilig. In this case, lekker orange, lekker veilig.
Yeah.
So what we did, we launched basisbeveiliging or baseline security or security baseline.eu, and we put all regional governments in Europe on there and all CSERTs in Europe on there. So, yeah, because they have responsibilities in that country, we assume. And we've been nice enough to combine the CSERT website with their most important national website. Because, well, they should be responsible for something, and it levels the playing field, because in some countries you have gov, dot, whatever country extension, and some countries they have only like ncsc.fr or something like that. It's actually CNIL or something. So we collected, we leveled the playing field there a little bit, and you see that all CSERTs and governmental domains have some issues. So there's at the moment nobody's green. No of the CSERTs is doing well in baseline cybersecurity hygiene, and there are differences between them. And I've also seen that for some reason some weird domain has slipped through the cracks and was added to the Dutch side. So I guess this weekend I'll check it out and see if everything is going well. But 60,000 regional governments, and France has like infinite municipalities. It's like insane, it's ridiculous, and it renders pretty well. I see the website's open.
Yeah, it looks amazing.
it's ridiculous, and you can do like 3D and then the tilt the map, and then you can do a circle around it. You can see who has higher risk. It's pretty fun, and it renders really well.
Yeah,
surprisingly well. And the measurements are going pretty pretty well, and the adoption was also awesome. The first day we were like headlining Hacker News for a day, so that was fun. And we got a lot of positive responses. A lot of governments are using the change request feature that we have launched. So they are able to change or add domains or move them or whatever. So that is fun as well. We have had only one request saying like, oh, we did not authorize you, blah, 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 blah. Okay, well, we don't need your permission.
Yeah, so it's the internet. Good luck.
Sorry, yeah, this is all public information. So, and yeah, still, you want this information. You want to know what people have on you already, and this is just the friendly part. This is not even the like we are here at OrangeCon, we are like, we do the low tier stuff. Next to us is the high tier stuff, the DIVD, and next to that is the police. You can choose what you want. So yeah, and that has been a success, and there's even more funny stuff coming from that. We had an email from a DNS provider, Quad9.
DNS. Ah, always.
And they said, like, hey, maybe we have some other .nl domains for you.
Ooh.
So we now have 91% of the .nl zone, and also more than 10,000 new domains that we'll be adding to basisbeveiliging.nl in the coming week. So
yeah,
that's pretty
and fun. Quad9 has that because somebody has resolved.
Yeah, yeah, is using their resolver.
Quad9
and they,
those.
Yeah, they okay. provide that data to initiatives that try to make the web better, for example.
Amazing.
And yeah, that so that's really nice. And we published the government sites from that and whatever. And it was 10,000 more. And what we also do is we analyze the results. What are the conclusions? For example, that email sucks everywhere, on all governments, except somewhere it sucks less in the Netherlands and Denmark, but overall it's 99% of all emails from governments are poorly implemented. So, and there's like 1,000 PHP my admin portals, of course.
Yes. Yeah. So open the champagne.
Yeah, it is
terrible.
It is horrible.
I think the last session we did here today ended on the note we're all doomed. This is not going any better, is it?
There is some positive news, but it's not.
We're still doomed. We're still doomed. Yeah, it's either data breaches or just the basisbeveiliging, which is not up to snuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. But at least failing is good, and then we have all the guests at the table.
Exactly.
Yes.
I think we should leave it at this.
Yes, I think so too.
Conclude the day. So, any last remarks, Ad?
I had fun, and we already heard there will be OrangeCon next year around the same time. Maybe tonight in our regular episode we can tell that. I will try to find Barry and squeeze it out of him.
Yes.
So maybe we have some news on that later today or whenever you might hear our next episode, our regular episode. That's it for me, I guess.
Yeah, I think it was a fun day. Thank you for being here. I'm looking at all the guests, also
yes,
all the other guests that have been here.
Thank you for having
earlier.
Us.
Thank you.
And it was really nice to be here. Was the first one for me. Next year.
We're back.
And then I think in a few minutes we will hear here locally when that is. And for the rest of the audience, you will hear that later.
Bye bye.
That's it. Bye.